Hello and welcome back. This week we are discussing disgusting.
We are disgusting.
We are disgusting.
Welcome to Feeling It, a podcast where we discuss TV, movies, pop culture, and whether or not we are feeling it. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show.
And here we go.
Come on, walk and talk.
All right, here we go.
You guys want to hear something neat?
It's showtime.
Hold your ears, folks.
Here we go.
See what you can do now.
Take your position.
All right, ladies, buckle up.
Let's do this.
Hold on to your butts.
Seriously?
Listen to me very, very carefully.
Hey, it's me again.
Eat him up.
Enjoy.
Hello and welcome back. This week we are discussing Fast X, the newest entry in the Fast and Furious franchise. But before we get into that, let's introduce ourselves and answer the question, who is your favorite Fast and Furious antagonist?
I am Sandra Amstutz. I'm based in Nashville, Tennessee. And this is a great question. I decided to analyze the antagonists in these movies solely in the movie when they are the antagonist and not
yes.
their recurring appearances. But even still, based on that, I feel like the clear answer is Deckard Shaw, played by Jason Statham. He's the only one that is, like, people were so excited to have him as a villain. He was, like, seated in the post-credits for the movie before. I think he just is a perfect villain. I think he was the perfect antagonist to Vin Diesel specifically.
For sure. Fantastic antagonist. I'm Lucas Wright from Chicago, and my favorite is not because they are, I think, the best, but Carter Verone from Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh.
I thought that movie is terrible.
He's
but
definitely the most vicious, I feel like.
He is the meanest villain. I think he is one of the, like, most, like, juicy, like, almost Bond villain type characters that
yes.
we've gotten in this franchise. And it's not the kind of bad guy that we've seen in a lot of these movies. And I just remember, like, seeing that movie for the first time, just being like, this is fun. And we haven't had, like, a real fun villain until Fast X. So, which we'll get into in a little bit. But,
you know, I don't think I can ever rewatch that movie because of the rat scene with that villain. I was truly couldn't look at the TV, horrified.
You're right. It is the most, I think, probably disgusting thing that's ever happened to the Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they don't go that grimy anymore.
Not at all. Not at all. Well, before we start talking about Fast and Furious, every week we like to talk about something we've either discovered or rediscovered throughout that week. So, Sandra, let us know what you're feeling.
Yeah, so it's also been a while since we've talked about what we're feeling.
It's not this week.
Yeah, so here's one thing I do just want to say is that, like, if you listen to every episode of this podcast, you might have realized, like, hey, we haven't put out an episode in quite a long time. There's been about maybe a 2-month gap or so. That is because about 2 months ago, my father passed away. And so I have taken some time to be with my family, just kind of grieve. And so that's just the reason why we have taken this break for a while. I want to thank Lucas for being incredibly supportive during this and giving me this space that I needed before I could come back to the podcast. All that being said, what I am feeling this week actually is from this week. Surprisingly, other than watching Succession for the past 2 months, I haven't been taking in a lot of media. It's mostly when Vanderpump Rules and Succession is like entire media diet. But this past week, I did do a night with some friends where we did, like, kind of a double feature movie night. We didn't plan on this being a double feature. It just kind of became one naturally. But in one night, we did a Matt and Ben double feature where we watched The Town from Ben Affleck, and then we watched The Bourne Identity from Matt Damon. And it was a really great, there were two movies that were really great to watch back to back. I had never seen The Town.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was fun to, like, finally get to watch that. And then I was just itching to watch The Bourne Identity as well. And just these two movies about men being hunted, being on the run, you know, having these, like, great analytical minds that I think both Matt and Ben kind of pride themselves on having. Yeah. And yeah, they're both great movies. And I had dreams all that night about people hunting me down.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I would recommend people, I think it makes me want to maybe do another Matt and Ben double feature, like try to find what two movies are they not in together that kind of pair nicely together.
Love that. Both of those movies are great. And I'm so interested in the Matt and Ben dynamic. I haven't seen Air yet.
Me
but
either.
Just like seeing them back together again and just like, what is their dynamic now? As like,
I know. Maybe my next double feature, because I also haven't seen The Duel yet, and I know
I need to.
Is maybe I'll do The Duel and Air in one night.
That's actually probably a really good one. Very different dynamics in those movies.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's great.
Well, what are you feeling this week?
Well, Sandra, I always say there are two things that I love, and that's urban environments and analytics, right? I always say that.
You always say that.
I always say it. Well, this week I'm actually feeling the YouTube channel City Nerd.
I love when you tell me about a YouTube channel.
Look, YouTube channels are, they're wild. They're wild. I go down rabbit holes.
Your YouTube channels are always like this lonesome man, like, yes, whittling a thing and like filming himself for 4 hours.
There's nothing I love better than like a dedicated lonely man.
Yes.
So City Nerd is a channel where Ray De La Hante, who's a transportation planning and engineering consultant, talks about just livability in the United States. And one of his most popular videos is about like the most undervalued cities, and he uses statistics around like walkability, transit, affordability.
By undervalued, does he mean like more people should live? Like people don't realize how great it is to live here.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And he just kind of like walks you through how he evaluates these cities, and he does little like Google Earth tours of the city to kind of tell you not only just like the city itself, but also like great neighborhoods with stuff like that. I find it very cute of just like, he's very passionate about this, and he has very detailed videos.
Yeah.
And in general, like his videos on urbanism and like density and like the value you get out of different areas of the country is really interesting to me. So I like some of his most popular videos are, what are the best suburbs in North America and the most useless urban rail systems in the U.S. and stuff like that. That like some of these things I think people have no interest in. But yeah. I do think like the idea around like when people talk about cities, they talk about the big cities.
Right.
You talk about New York, you talk about San Francisco, L.A., Chicago, those types of cities.
Right.
But he really gets into the topic of small cities and like how useful are small cities and what's it like to live in those, and what is actually, again, coming back to that value, is it worth it to live in these places, which I think is really interesting.
So are there any cities that he has sparked your interest in? Like,
not necessarily to live in,
okay,
but more so to visit.
Okay.
I love cities. I love living in cities. I think for me, I can't even think about living in a city until I've visited it,
mm-hmm,
and seen it for myself. But I think for me, cities like Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, stuff like that I like that aren't in my head as like, these are fun, cool cities.
Right.
I think some of the ways that he's talked about them have interested me. I think some of the cities that we talk about a lot, like, I think culturally we talk a lot about like Nashville and, mm-hmm, Dallas and some of the, I think
Houston,
some of the big cities that are, wouldn't be counted among like the top five cities. He loves to talk about like the neighborhoods in those cities and,
yeah,
finding areas that really fit your lifestyle, which I think is.
That is cool. One thing that I would need him to do, maybe he already has, is have a video specifically or include this in his evaluation of cities, is I need to know like which smaller cities, like not your big Nashville, yeah, Houston's, New York's, you know, those kind of things, which smaller cities have great indie movie theaters? Because it's like, that is
true.
A key component on me thinking whether I could live there or not.
It really is. No, I feel the exact same way. As I like look at places to live, I'm always just like, okay, do a search for all the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Where are they? Where are they in the city? How long does it take to get to them?
Right.
What are the, what's the indie versus, you know, popular theater recommendation options? So, yeah.
Right. I mean, most people think about like public transport or like schools.
Where's the indie theater?
Yeah.
So I would highly encourage everyone to at least check out, you know, a couple of his videos. This is not going to be something that's for everyone, but he is, I think, such a lovable doofus, like in the nicest way, that he's so sincere and loving about his love of transportation in cities. So these videos are great. I love them. I watch every single one. You probably won't.
Well, if he ever does make one specifically about movie theaters, I do need you to send that my way.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Will do. All right. Well, in that case, let's transition to Fast. I keep wanting to say Fast 10. It is Fast X. On the dangerous. I'm so sad they didn't just go with fasten your seatbelt. Even if it's just like a tagline.
Yeah.
Like
it should have been a tagline.
It should, like, come on. This franchise is so meta at this point that like using a fan generated like slogan is fine.
Yeah.
Should be doing this. based on some of the stuff that's in this movie, which we'll talk about, they should absolutely.
Also, they've never like shied away from like a fun idea that they found online. You know what I mean? Like
going to space in the ninth movie is based on people saying how ridiculous these movies have gotten. They should go to space.
Right.
And they did. So using a tagline, fasten your seatbelts. I don't know why I'm so caught up in that, but that's that's for now.
Sure. We got to use it in every social media caption, like everyone.
It's true.
You know,
it's true. So this is the 10th Fast and Furious movie, if we're not counting the spinoff Hobbs and Shaw.
No, we're not.
I'm not. So this film sees Louis Leterrier stepping in as director after 5-time family director Justin Lin quit in the middle of production due to creative differences.
Yeah, sad.
Very sad. This film is the first of two, possibly three films, hinted at from Vin Diesel, which marks the beginning of the end for the franchise. It also introduces Jason Momoa as the new big bad, Dante Reyes, son of, Hernan Reyes, who is the villain of Fast Five. So before we get into all the ridiculous plot details of this movie, Sandra, high level, overall, did you like this movie?
So I love the Fast and the Furious franchise. I have so much fun watching these movies. The good ones, the bad ones, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Ultimately, I had a fun time watching this movie. I would refer to this movie as a fun installment.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is a good movie. It is. I think there are a lot of issues. I think I have a lot of questions on why they made some of the choices they did. Ultimately, like, this is not as good as the movies in this franchise that I really love. But because this franchise has built up so much goodwill, I still had fun just being with these performers, being in this vibe, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot to make me mad at a Fast and Furious movie. But I can acknowledge that this is not its best.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you there. I don't think it's its best. I had fun the entire time.
Yeah.
There are other Fast and Furious movies, which I will say 9 included, where I am bored during it, where there are just pieces of it that I'm just like,
sure.
At no point during this movie was I bored. There were things that I thought were dumb and ridiculous and didn't really make sense, but I wasn't bored. So
yeah. You know, a lot of my issues with the film are like, I've really bought into like the grand scheme of the storytelling in this universe and like the ethos of the Fast and the Furious. Like, I'm really bought in. And so there are like higher level questions that I have about how this franchise treats villains that I think we can get into. And then also like more minute, like this film specifically, like how they structured the story of this film. And where this franchise is heading.
I agree.
A lot of structural quabbles. But what I will say that this film continues to do is it continues to, like, take me across the globe. It continues to, like, make me laugh and make me dance in my seat and get really excited when certain people come on screen. when they replay the tropes that they do in every one of the movies, I'm always like, yes, it's finally time for this scene. And so, like, that little kid excitement that I get is really invaluable to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is, as I was watching it, I was thinking about, like, what is the difference between these movies and, like, the Marvel movies?
Yeah.
And I think not a lot. Like, it goes for the same tropes of, like, we're gonna bring things back, we're gonna reintroduce stuff, we're gonna do callbacks to other movies, and really dig into enjoying that. I think the difference is that the Marvel movies take themselves more seriously than these movies. And these movies operate on soap opera plots, and so people coming back from the dead in ridiculous ways. The way that people are introduced.
Everyone is somehow a blood relative.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's more camp and I think more winking at the fans with some of these things. I think what this movie did that feels a little different is did some of the Marvel stuff where we're like, yeah, we know this is dumb, but I'm going to talk about it anyway, kind of a thing. We're more like almost being too cool for it, which we'll talk a little bit about Brie Larson's character, I think, in spoilers. But I think some of that stuff was where I was just like, this is not good. This is not what you should be leaning into in this franchise.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff they did with Dante, with Jason Momoa's character, I really liked. I do want to talk more about his femininity, I guess, in this movie. I loved it, but I know in Hollywood there's a history of kind of queer coding villains. And so just the idea of having a more androgynous, what does he say? Toning down the masculinity on Jason Momoa, I thought was like really fascinating and fun in a way that didn't feel like it was poking fun at the queer community or kind of leaning into a lot of, I think, the Hollywood stereotypes. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I was so invested in the Jason Momoa performance. Let me tell you, Jason Momoa is the best thing about Dune Part 1.
Agreed.
Hands down, the best thing in that movie. And I was so, like, Dune I had complicated feelings about, but, like, every time he was on screen, I was, like, in love with him. I also am a big Aquaman defender. I think that movie is really great and fun. And so I'm slowly becoming, like, a Jason Momoa fangirl. Like, and then this movie, I wasn't prepared for how much I was going to love his performance.
Same.
His performance surprised me. It was every moment he was on screen, he was having fun, and so I was having fun.
I smile. He just shows up, and I immediately just start smiling.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Every little physical flourish, every little quip he had, I feel like they brought his villain back to a little bit more of the griminess that we kind of talked about from the second one.
Yeah.
In a way that I could stomach, though, that wasn't, like, horrifying, that was just kind of, like, fun and, like, ooh, this guy is, like, twisted, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's his take on the Joker in a way that I think is, again, very, very fun. That's the only word I keep repeating because that's the main thing I was experiencing. As far as, like, his androgyny, femininity that he, like, brings to this character, for me it's refreshing because this franchise is very machismo. Like, it is almost a parody of masculinity. And so it is fun to bring in a villain that is, like, the opposite of that.
Yeah.
And it came to my mind, too, like, the idea of, like, this trope of queer villains. And ultimately, I just kind of was like, I don't feel like this character is, like, trying to, it doesn't feel like an offensive stereotype to me. It feels kind of singular. It feels like I'm having so much fun that it's hard to think about, like, the implications of this character in the, like, the grander scheme of queer villains, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm glad we feel the same way about
it. Yeah, yeah. It reminds you that that is a thing, but I don't feel bothered by this performance in any way in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's the other thing about, like, the whole queer villain thing. Is that, like, my theory on that, one, I think it goes, it's a two-part, right? I do think there's a sense of, like, people villainizing, like, these queer-coded characters because of, like, this fear, this homophobia, this fear. There's another part, though, of me that thinks, yeah, because queer people are fabulous and cool and, like, you want to make your villain interesting to watch, you know?
Yeah.
I do think, like, that sometimes is part of it. And, like, that's just a, that is, that's how it, the cookie crumbles, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think in a world where ideally your protagonist and antagonist should have, like, contrasting values, like,
right.
that's an easy way to kind of put that in there. I think in this movie it has nothing to do with that at all. Like,
right.
But it is just something I think that, like, I thought about when he first popped up. I was like, oh, interesting. They're doing something completely different than I expected.
Right.
And is not in the trailers at all.
Yeah.
Which I found.
Yeah.
Huh. Like, I wonder what the marketing decisions were
right.
on some of these
No,
things,
that's a great so. Point. And, well, one, I'm sure it was, like, a marketing, like, decision of, like, we don't want to alienate audiences. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that it wasn't, because it was such a fun surprise.
Yeah. 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 For sure. And I think, like, coming off the last couple movies, the bad guy has been Charlize Theron, really, in the last two movies.
Yeah.
And she's one of the worst bad guys, as far as just has no character, really, is very mm-hmm. boring, is completely plot-driven. All tech, which I hate tech in these movies.
Right.
It's so boring.
Right.
And so, like, she's been really nothing. And so switching from that to this, to me, feels like a massive step up. But also to have her in here makes her more interesting now, because she's not all powerful. She's not in charge. She's also being attacked by him. Like, stuff
yeah.
like this that just makes it more, I don't know. It elevates her character as well in a way that I find very interesting.
We can talk more about her in spoilers, because I have a yeah. lot of questions and thoughts about her character.
Me too.
Yeah.
So overall, I would just say, like, I found this movie very fun and entertaining. It's not going to rank, I think, in the top half of my Fast and Furious movies.
No.
But I think there's going to be parts about this that I'd be happier to revisit than a lot of other Fast movies.
Yeah, for me, I'm just like, this is going to be at the bottom of my ranking with the idea.
Like, the very bottom?
It's not, like, last. It's,
okay.
But it's towards the bottom. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be towards the bottom, but it, like I said, because I'm a Fast and the Furious fan, I had plenty of fun.
Yeah.
And so it's like this, they've really, the problem I think with the franchise is that they are really now only making movies for people that have seen every single movie. And
yeah.
that is not a great money, that's not a great way to make a lot of money, you know?
Well, Marvel would disagree with that.
But you know what, though, Lucas? I do think that, like, maybe I'm wrong here. Like, the Marvel movies, or I'm comparing this to Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, because this mm-hmm. feels like the closest comparison to that.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks that, like, if you hadn't seen every single Marvel movie, those are still... You might still enjoy those, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I'd have to think about that more.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who watched those movies not having seen
yeah,
them. But
yeah.
It's interesting to think about, for sure.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that more to see how I feel about, like, if the structure of those is good enough on its own. And I don't mean that, like, you'd have to – that someone who has never seen a Fast and the Furious movie, like – what I mean is, like, in order to enjoy this movie, I think you have to be a dedicated fan. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Some people, like, they see, like, a couple, and then they'll go see this latest one. And I don't think that just seeing a couple would be enough to enjoy this one.
I think that's
the way with Marvel,
true.
I do think you could, like, jump in and out.
With Marvel, I think you're right. I think the way that I'm thinking about it is, like, for Marvel, you have to see the movies for plot reasons.
Right.
Whereas for... for Fast and Furious, you have to see the other ones for vibe reasons.
Yes, like, absolutely.
To get the movie on a level that to it's be, trying to like, play at. To
be brainwashed you know? Into loving the vibe, you have to have seen it right. 9 times before. Yeah.
All right, I'm on board with that take for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm anxious to really talk about the details of this.
I agree. Let's get into it.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
Are you paying attention?
It's your last chance to walk away.
Let me tell you what's going to happen.
Now, cracking gas.
Spoilers!
Remember, you wanted this.
Okay, let's start with Charlize, because the movie starts with Charlize, kind of.
Yes. Yes. Shockingly.
Yeah. So I don't have a problem with the villains becoming part of the gang. You know, like, this has become a thing in these movies, right?
Yep.
Like, I've grown to accept that.
I would say starting with Brian in the first one.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so the problem is that I feel like 8 and 9 set up Charlize as the big villain. Like, mm-hmm. not the villain that becomes a friend. Like, the villain that they will eventually vanquish, right?
Yes, yeah.
And the other villains have the luxury of, like, the characters they killed were able to come back to life in some way, right?
Yes.
As far as we know, I don't think that they're going to do that with Elena. Like,
know how they could.
Yeah.
That's the clearest death that's ever happened on this series.
Yeah. And she's the mother of the child that Dom and Letty are raising now. So, like, that would also be very strange to have her come back. So having Charlize shoot Elena in front of Vin Diesel, like, point blank, it's just like, that is really hard to come back from. And this movie is toying with that line, right? Of they're not friends with her, but they are working with her. And I am not really into that, to be quite honest.
The way that I see it, based on the plot of this movie, is she shows up shot and basically says, people are coming after you
right.
as well. And then everybody takes off. Basically to go after the Italy team.
Yeah.
They're not working with her at that point.
Right.
It's just she informs them that this is happening. He's like, I want to kill you, but I have to go save my team, kind
Which
of thing.
Also is kind of strange, and it's like, here's me calling out, like, plot logic in Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
But, like, she says, like, the enemy of my enemy, like, is my
is
friend
you.
Or whatever.
She says it's you.
It's you, right.
Yeah.
And so, but, like, Dante is not still after Charlize, right? Like,
correct. Yeah. All he wanted is what he got, and now he's
right.
done with her.
So it's
so
not
there's
like
no reason
she
for her to come.
Is like yeah. needs protection and needs Vin Diesel to kill Dante in order to save her. Like,
I agree with that.
It would just be revenge, I guess. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But also, Dom never sees her again for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He goes to Italy and is done. It's just when Letty gets captured by the agency and they're stuck in that room together.
Yeah.
And they spend the rest of the movie in that room fighting, basically.
Yeah.
So, like, and the only reason at the very end that they decide to work together is because they're trapped in Antarctica.
Right. But I feel like the end where Giselle comes out.
Yes. Yes.
Indicates that, like, Charlize knew Giselle was there.
Yeah.
And that they are going to work together in some
way. I agree. But to me, that is potential scariness for the next movie. Not necessarily that they did anything.
Okay, yeah.
Just that they set up stuff that I'm probably not going to like in future movies.
Right. True. So, true.
But I agree with you. I don't love that. I didn't love the Jason Statham twist of him working with the team until they revealed that Han was alive, kind of a thing. That's kind of why they brought Han back.
Yeah.
So that Jason Statham could be part of the family. Like you said, I don't think they can do that with Charlize, so I am curious how this
right.
ends up happening.
I almost wish that instead, because I feel like the thought process is, like, we can't have Charlize be the villain again because people are going to get tired of that. Like, we need...
Already were.
new blood, right?
Yeah.
To me, it's like, just do dueling villains. Like, have Charlize after them and Jason Momoa after them. And they're having to, like, be on the run from two different villains at the same time. Which they kind of did in Seven, right? Like, which I think kind of worked. Anyway, that was an issue for me. My biggest issue with this movie is that they split the gang up for the majority of the movie.
That's the next thing I wanted to talk about. I don't mind a split up. I'm actually interested in the different dynamics between the characters, and when they're all together all the time, you don't get to see some of those dynamics flourish. So splitting up, I think, is a good idea. Splitting up for the entire movie is bad.
Yeah.
And the way that they split these people up, I thought didn't help anything.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you have Dominic Toretto's whole team for most of the movie is Brie Larson and the sister, Elena.
Isabel.
Oh, yeah. Elena is the sister. The cop. Sister's
name is Isabel.
Sister's name is Isabel. Yes. So you have two new characters being the people who are, and I guess the, so you have Ames, Brie Larson, and Isabel.
Yeah.
As the three people who Dom is teaming up with, which are people we have no relationship with at all.
Yeah.
And so to have him surrounded by that feels just boring.
Very boring. Both of which women Dom got to swoop up and cradle in his arms and carry away. Here's what I will say about that.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. That, like, not super interesting. Dom on his own in 8 was interesting. Like, being the whole gang being separated from him and him having to, like, try to work things out on his own. That was interesting. But Dom on the run on his own was not great for me.
Yeah.
What I did like was the reveal that the Isabel girl was Elena's sister.
Yeah, that worked.
I was into that. I got emotional in that scene between the two of them when she's talking about, like, her and her sister being, like, these opposites, and Vin Diesel says, like, I know, like, what can happen between a cop and a street racer.
Yeah, yeah.
I
real good stuff
lost it. And it's like moments like that are what make me love this franchise. And it's just like, I wish the movies would lean into those more. Which is why I really liked, like, half of 9, you know?
Yeah.
It's because, like, half of 9 really leaned into that. And why I also love, like, that's why we love Fast 5, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, so that was really special to me.
That's team 1, I'll say. That's, like, the Dom team.
Yeah.
The second split up is... that I do want to talk about is Charlize and
Letty.
Letty, Michelle Rodriguez's character. I kind of like that, where they're having to work stuff out a little bit on their own.
Sure.
They don't have a lot to do in this movie at all.
Sure.
They're very off to the side. But I like their fight. I'm curious to see what happens next there.
Yeah, I don't mind. Like, it wasn't fascinating. It wasn't amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm never going to be mad at getting to watch Michelle Rodriguez and Charlize Theron have, like, multiple fight sequences, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. The next group that I have a lot of questions about this is Little B.
Yeah.
With Uncle...
John Cena.
Jacob, yes.
Yeah, Uncle Jacob.
I hate that they spelled Jacob with a K. It's just... Again, it's a movie, they're saying it out loud, but when you see it written down, it has a K in it, and it just kills me every time.
Let me also say, I have a lot of questions about Rita Moreno being their John Cena, Vin Diesel, and Jordana Brewster's grandmother.
Yes, yes. And this this little black kid being the child of the whitest... supposedly Brazilian woman and Vin Diesel.
Yes. It's
hilarious to me.
But. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
But again, that's some of that soap opera casting
that
we're getting in these, like, movies.
Yeah.
So, the team up of Little Brian and Jacob for me was fun. I like that dynamic. But this is a completely different character than what we saw in the previous movie from Jacob. Like, he's silly. He's completely ridiculous. He's nice. I mean, it just in general, it's completely different, which again, I'm fine with. It was whatever. I felt like I would have loved to see that dynamic with someone who had been around the family the entire time. I know he's his uncle, but like, to me, emotionally, having someone who we've seen kind of grow up with this franchise,
sure,
get to hang out with little Brian the entire time.
I mean, let's talk about what it could have been like to have little Brian and Ludacris.
Exactly. Or even, you know,
Roman
would have been like any Han, like any of these people who have been around a long time and that we have a deep connection with.
Yeah.
I feel like would have just intensified that a lot. Again, still had fun with it, though.
Yeah. I also like, I probably wouldn't have been as fun, but you could have done something with Jordana Brewster.
Yeah.
And him. And it's like me and my aunt. And I mean, we always have like this. The problem with these movies is like the idea that like Brian is alive with their kids somewhere that we never see, right? And I do think you could have worked out like Jordana Brewster is like trying to take little Brian, little B, to Brian and the kids, like, and you know.
I just think you truly get so much more emotionality out of that pairing with any other character in this group. But again, didn't hate it.
Yeah.
So,
do we think that Jacob is really dead?
Not at all.
Okay.
I mean, it felt like a good sacrifice for this movie, but there's no way he's dead.
Yeah.
It would be ridiculous if he actually were dead.
To me, I kind of think he is, because it's like, why do to me, it's like John Cena doesn't want to do more movies.
Yeah.
And so it's like, let me peace out, you know?
If that were the case, I would have made it a more obvious death. I mean, like,
sure,
the whole buildup of the filmmaking makes it feel like a death, but the actual, like, dynamics of car crash.
Car fires are always, suspicious.
Like, we've had so many people die in car crashes that just walked away.
Yeah.
Or just so many car crashes that are on fire that aren't even a, you know, twist walk away, just like they just get out of the car and keep going. So stuff like that, that's just like, we'll see.
Yeah, good point. Okay, and then our last group,
which is the core group of Ludacris,
the comedic relief group.
Yeah. I have always liked the Tyrese Ludacris situation.
Sure.
I like Natalie Emmanuel, but their whole connection with her has always felt a little bit icky to me.
Yeah.
I think in 7 it gets really weird where they're both like vying for her affection or whatever.
But isn't
in a weird way.
I feel like the vibe I've gotten is that like she and Ludacris are a couple now.
They are.
Okay.
And Tyrese is the comic relief on the side. But just they're always together in all of these movies. It's like the three of them.
Yeah.
And ever since she joined the mix, the dynamic has been, I think, weird. Again, not because of her specifically. I just think they don't know how to really do much with them as a group.
I don't like that they split the group up as much as they did, because the best part of the movie for me is like that big bomb sequence in Rome, you know,
where they're all working together.
Like, that's what we love. We love those big heist sequences where like the whole gang like has a role, you know.
Yeah.
You got Letty zipping around on a motorcycle. You have, you know, Ludacris.
Her little jump on that is the best stunt of the movie.
It's
like where
so
she jumps
cool.
over the pole or whatever. I know it's not her. It's a stunt person
or
whatever. But like that to me, I was just like, you've got all of these visual effects, all these ridiculous things going on in this movie. And everybody is freaking out about this one, you know, just motorcycle jump.
It's
hilarious. So.
Yeah. And so like when they're apart for that long, it's like the scene with Ludacris and Tyrese and Natalie and Han, and when they are Sung Kang, when they go to the Pete Davidson shop, let me tell you, I wasn't mad at seeing Pete Davidson. I think like that was a fun, like everyone laughs, like we didn't expect to see Pete Davidson in this. The edible brownie bit was, I think, really lame.
Yep.
I didn't understand what Tyrese was doing with the dust that he would throw.
Yeah. It was too long, and the whole scene didn't really do anything at all.
Yes, like, it was too long, and they didn't get any weapons, and they also didn't get caught.
Yeah.
It was for nothing, I also want to say I was kind of disappointed with the meeting between Deckard Shaw and Han.
Yeah. I was as well. I thought that was going to be a bigger deal.
Yeah, because that was seated in the previous post-credit scene in the previous movie. They have that scene of Deckard Shaw punching, and then he opens the door, and there's Han, and he has a scared look on his face. And so you really think, like, Han's going to be like, fuck you, dude. You tried to kill me.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was a little, like, anticlimactic.
I think this series is just has a hard time with conflict in general. Like, they're good at plot conflict, but, like, character conflict, they just have a difficult time not smoothing everything over quickly.
Sure.
And so kind of, I wanted more conflict between them. It would have been great if, like, the entire movie, they're just not trusting each other, and then they come together at the end kind of a thing.
Totally.
Like something like that, that just gives us more resolution, but them too, within literally 60 seconds, they're, like, on the same side.
Yeah. Or something where, like, they're like, we have to go to Deckard Shaw for guns or whatever.
Yeah.
And Han is, like, super salty about it. Like, you know. I will say that he looked incredible in that fight sequence. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Just, I love watching him. Just, I'm so glad that he's back in these movies. Watching him drive, watching him fight, he's just, you know, the coolest guy in these films. Then the next thing that we have is, like, the CIA people.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about the agency as a whole.
The agency, yeah.
I don't like the agency in these movies.
No.
They have never been good. Like, no. I love Kurt Russell.
The Kurt Russell stuff was great.
He's great. But the larger, like, agency being a plot point, having them be a spy team.
We hate Scott Eastwood.
Scott Eastwood is the worst.
And it was strange that, like, he was brought in, and then it was like, did he die? Like, what happened to him, like, in Rome?
Because he wasn't in the last movie, and then he just kind of disappears after Rome. Like,
but it was like, yeah, it was like a really odd way to, like, get rid of him in that movie.
Yeah.
I was not into this new Ames guy.
No, not at all. It felt like a replacement for The Rock immediately, because he comes in, he's like, I hate these guys, this is the worst, we have to arrest them, everybody keeps liking them, and, you know, you shouldn't like them, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then they go to Brazil, and 5 minutes after arresting Dominic, he's like, you know what, we're on the same team now, kind of a thing. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. I am glad they did the twist at the end, where it turns out he has been working with Dante the whole time.
Yeah.
But as a character, he is just nothing.
Yeah. He reminds me of, in Fast 9, there was that, they love to cast, like, a bulking blonde guy, you know?
I honestly don't remember because of how forgettable these, like,
not Fast 9, Fast 8 is what I meant.
The Game of Thrones dude.
Yes. But they love to just cast, like, this giant blonde man. And I felt like this is, like, their version of that, who, like, doesn't have a lot of personality and is just, like, out to get them, you know?
Yes, agreed. I do have to state for facts he's a redhead.
Oh.
In Fast 8.
Maybe I'm thinking of someone else. Maybe I'm thinking of Fast 6.
Look, yeah, I get
one
it, though.
Of them is
there's
blonde.
A lot of hulking number twos.
No, because I like the redhead. Yeah, I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the blonde guy. I think it's in maybe Fast 6.
That's the only one I didn't watch for this.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And then Brie Larson.
Oscar winner Brie Larson.
I know. It's like, I like Brie Larson.
Yeah.
But I'm struggling with...
I think she's given terrible dialogue.
Yes.
Like, her introduction in the weird CG room of TVs.
Yeah.
Where she first talks
recap.
To Ames.
The recap.
The recap, where they just go through, this is everything the team's ever done.
Right.
This dialogue is atrocious.
Yeah.
And hard to watch her do this.
Yeah.
But then her being Mr. Nobody's daughter, I felt like they leaned in a little bit too much on Captain America. I feel like Captain America had this as well. Not Captain America. Captain Marvel. Jeez, there we go.
Yeah.
Her other movie. Where it's like, I'm a girl and I'm also dangerous, kind of a thing. Like,
right.
But I'm super cool and also feminine. Like,
yes.
This, because to be fair, a lot of the women in these movies are written a lot like the men.
Yeah.
Fast car driver is very stoic, very, you know, and
sure.
I think one of the reasons Natalie Emmanuel, I think kind of was a new standout. She couldn't even drive, like stuff like that, where she's, it's interesting.
Right.
Whereas Brie Larson comes in and she's like, I'm a badass. I'm going to beat up everybody in this bar. Like stuff like this. That's just like, well, this tells me nothing about her actual character.
Yeah.
And she's just spouting plot points the entire time.
Right. Yeah. And she doesn't, they don't give her any of like the mystique that Mr. Nobody had.
And yes. Again, she's immediately like turning on the agency, like within 10 seconds, like
right.
She's introduced and she's like, well, I'm going to do something different. And it's like, why? What's right. happening here?
I know. So. I know. It was tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's trying to think back on like the things that I loved in the movie. In addition to Jason Momoa, I lost my mind when we got to Brazil and we were doing the car race scene again.
Yes.
And Gasolina is playing.
Yep.
And we've got butts everywhere. I was like, I'm in a Fast and Furious movie again. Truly, yep. When Gasolina started playing, I became like my high school self again. I was like, hell yeah. I'm ready to party.
Yeah. I don't mind a little spy stuff in my Fast and Furious movies, but mostly I want butts and car races.
Yes. Yeah, like that shot of like all four cars lined up and like going through the windows is really great.
Yes.
I loved seeing our Brazil guy again with the guns.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Great stuff. I think that's a great way, because I was curious about them going back to Brazil.
Yeah.
If they were going to do much like kind of almost like rehashing stuff that we'd already seen. And I mean, they do at the very beginning, but in a way just to introduce Jason Momoa's character. But this felt new and fun in a way that like we didn't get this exactly in Rio last time we were here. So
sure.
I liked it.
I kind of was hoping that they were going to drive us safe somewhere again, you know, like as a callback.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, driving that ball around Rome did feel a little bit like that.
Sure. Sure. I will say it was kind of fun to relive Fast Five at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I mean, it's such a good movie.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the ending.
Yeah.
I knew going in that this was sort of intended to be a part one, part two finale.
Good for you.
Well, we talked about it the last time.
We knew it was like... I knew that. I didn't know it was actually going to be a part one in the way that, like, there was going to end on a cliffhanger.
Because they haven't been marketing it that way.
Right,
just been marketing it as Fast 10, not Fast 10 Part 1.
Right. Which my assumption was Jason Momoa would carry over. Like, it would still be the same story, but we would end this movie. So I was shocked that we didn't.
Yeah. I was also surprised at, like, how much of a incomplete film it was.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate part one, part two finales. Like,
same.
Honestly, the only time I think I have liked it was Avengers, Infinity War, and Endgame. But those did feel like two complete films.
Yeah.
Like, even though Infinity War ends and the villain hasn't been vanquished, you know, it does feel like that story did end. It just like the bad guy won ultimately.
Yeah.
It didn't feel incomplete. And this is like clearly like a incomplete cliffhanger.
Yes.
Like,
yes. The Avengers movies are two movies where plot threads go throughout both. Whereas this is one movie that is cut in half is what it is. Truly what it felt like. Nothing is resolved.
100%.
No character elements, no plot elements, like truly not like, if you had just given me this as a 5-hour, like both movies, whatever it ends up being, as a 5-hour movie and said, like, this is our story. Sorry, it's 5 hours. I would have been like, okay, fine. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
if you need 5 hours to tell it, take 5 hours to tell it. But I don't want this. I don't want half of a movie.
Right.
Truly half of a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty disappointing.
But I will say, it is disappointing, but I will say, because I was entertained the entire time, I didn't realize that we were at the end of the movie. Because you know how as you're watching a movie, we've seen so many movies, that your brain starts to be like, okay, so I in my head, we got probably like 30 minutes left in this movie.
Right.
It feels like it's wrapping up kind of a thing.
Right.
I never had that. So in my head, I'm just like, we're in the middle of the movie. And then it ended and I was like, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
The one thing that like I think is the saving grace to this ending is that we get two reveals of two comebacks.
Yes.
We have Giselle, which I, you know, I've been rooting for a long time.
Yep.
I feel like it's appropriate now. I already am so excited about the Giselle Han reunion. Like, yep. I can't wait for that to happen. And then we have The Rock back.
Yep.
Which I think is going to be great. Like, I do think The Rock is, like, an important charisma element to these films.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can end this franchise without The Rock in
Yeah.
it. So,
yeah.
I'm very excited.
And I do like the way that they brought The Rock back. That it was like, hey, you were literally the person that shot my dad. Like, of course you're included in my revenge scheme.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that's really
good. Yeah. Yeah, so... I'm still excited about this franchise. I hope that it's only one film and not two.
Same.
I hope that Vin Diesel is just, you know, being Vin Diesel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so did you catch the flight attendant in the
yes.
film?
Yes. That was great to see. I did not realize that...
Paul Walker.
I just want to call him Brian. I didn't realize Paul Walker's daughter was that old at this point.
Yeah.
That's hard to see.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, there's a cameo in this movie where the flight attendant in the scene with Jacob and little B is played by Paul Walker's actual daughter. And the scene isn't that big. It's not like, you know, she has this big role.
Yeah.
But it's just nice to know that, like, she's involved.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it worked out well. I really loved that plane scene just in general.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think overall this franchise is so much fun, that I forgive the bumpiness of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And still, again, like I said, I enjoyed every minute of it. So
yeah, I feel like when I go to rewatch this movie, I might just like rewatch the Rome up until the end of the Rome sequence. Because I also did like at the beginning, like little Brian, like driving around.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, that really got me. I love the barbecue, you know, like, so I might watch up until the end of the Rome sequence and then just watch the Brazil, like, car race sequence.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two things in this movie that, like, I want to revisit again.
Yeah. I will definitely revisit the whole movie. I will watch the whole movie again for sure. Mostly because there's so much Jason Momoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Well, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. And so now we have... you know, till 2025 to
gosh, I know
for the next one. I think that's the other thing that, okay. Last thing I'll say.
Yeah.
The whole like 2-part finale thing is that like these movies are 2 years apart. Like they take 2 years for another one to come out. And so it's really frustrating to like leave things on that big of a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
When you have to wait 2 years for it to be resolved.
Avengers was 1 year apart, right? Because they shot it all at once.
I think so.
And then released. And that's, again, that's more what I'm interested in is...
Yes.
Make one movie.
Yes.
Like, or shoot it all at once. If it's truly a two-parter, shoot it all at once. And then write it all at once, shoot it all at once.
The other thing is, like, I can kind of understand movies doing that when they're basing it off of books, right? Like,
yeah.
A final book has so much in it, right? And that you're trying to, and that you feel like you can't do it within one movie, right?
Right.
But when it's original content, there's no excuse.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Yep.
Well, I'm so glad that we love this franchise together and that we get to come back to it every so often.
Agreed. No, this was a lot of fun. Well, in that case, Sandra, where can we find you online?
You can find me on all social media platforms. My last name or my handle is @SandraAmstutz, and my last name is spelled AMSTUTZ.
And you can find me everywhere at Lucas and Stuff. And you can find us all on
Feeling it pod. We're
feeling it pod.
We don't really post on social anymore.
We're not really.
I'm a bad social media manager when it comes to the podcast.
Look. Twitter's a rough space at the moment.
Yeah, but you can find us on our podcast. We posted. Yeah. Now that I'm back, we'll be posting regularly.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you. Goodbye, now. Goodbye.
Go away.
I'll see you soon, okay?
That's it. Go home.
Yep.
Moving along, Padre.
Goodbye, old friend.
That's it. That's our show for tonight, people.